I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
Today's September 5th deadline was set by the plaintiffs presenting the administration with two and only two real options to choose from.
And people think in terms of children, but they're really young adults.
A six-month clock that says to the 780,000 who are protected by DACA, your protection is going away.
The Trump administration announced the end of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program in September. It was a major shock for the hundreds of thousands of undocumented youth who have received a temporary deferral of deportation thanks to the DACA program.
Since 2012, the program has allowed participants to legally work and attend school in the U.S., but after October 5th of this year, applications for renewal were no longer accepted.
At the time of the announcement, we reached out to the group FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. They had advocated for the end of the DACA program, which they argued should not have existed in the first place. Here's Ira Melman with FAIR.
It wasn't the fault of the American people. It wasn't the fault of American laws. It was the conscious decision of parents to violate laws. And in every other area of law, without exception, we hold parents accountable for the consequences of their illegal decisions to their families and to their children.
In 2018, DACA permits will continue to expire without renewal, and Congress will have a decision to make what to do now that DACA is phasing out.
The issue has seen bipartisan support, but Congress hasn't even come up with a new plan. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell even indicated there's no rush since members have until March to officially act. Later, we'll hear from an immigration attorney who offered free help to DACA applicants this year and a DACA recipient who traveled to D.C. this month to try and persuade Congress to act before the new year. But first, to learn more about the current momentum or lack thereof, the show's Steve Goldstein spoke with Randy Capps, Director of Research for U.S. Programs at the Migration Policy Institute.
Well, to start with, the president himself said during the campaign and after the inauguration that he found the Dreamers to be a sympathetic population, a population that's generally highly skilled. So there's been always a sense that the administration wanted to keep some sort of protection for this population. But at the same time, both the Trump administration and the Republican Party have been against the concept of DACA being an executive action by the Obama administration as opposed to an act of Congress. So I think it's kind of that divide between viewing the DACA population as a sympathetic population on the one hand versus the fact that the DACA was implemented through executive action that's put them in a bit of a policy bind as to what the outcome should be.
Even for those who seem to support finding some way for DACA students to stay in the country legally, there's also been concern expressed about whether their parents should be allowed to stay or whether a chain migration comes into play here. How serious is this when considering the DACA students?
Well, to start with, the president himself said during the campaign and after the inauguration that he found the Dreamers to be a sympathetic population, a population that's generally highly skilled. So there's been always a sense that the administration wanted to keep some sort of protection for this population. But at the same time, both the Trump administration and the Republican Party have been against the concept of DACA being an executive action by the Obama administration as opposed to an act of Congress. So I think it's kind of that divide between viewing the DACA population as a sympathetic population on the one hand versus the fact that the DACA was implemented through executive action that's put them in a bit of a policy bind as to what the outcome should be.
Even for those who seem to support finding some way for DACA students to stay in the country legally, there's also been concern expressed about whether their parents should be allowed to stay or whether a chain migration comes into play here. How serious is this when considering the DACA students?
Well, the situation regarding the parents of DACA students has been an ongoing controversy. You may remember during the Obama administration, there were efforts to try to get some kind of protection for the parents of DACA recipients, and that never happened. There was this broader program for deferred action for parents of Americans, that is unauthorized parents with U.S. citizen children. And there's some overlap. Many of them also had DACA children. And none of those efforts really came to fruition. At the same time, if we look at the current legislation before Congress, we looked at this issue, CBO scored it. Some people who got a legal status through that legislation would be able to sponsor their parents, but it's not a very large number of people. The reason being that most of their parents are actually barred from getting green cards without leaving the country for a number of years because they entered the country across the border illegally. It's a complex issue with a lot of sides to it.
Is there a feeling that ultimately the outcome of what happens is the key, as opposed to whether it's done because of sympathy or empathy for the students or whether it's because it's good for the U.S. economy? Are these things that are factored in behind the scenes, or is it really more strictly about numbers and how things will affect the country, frankly?
Well, there are a lot of different people with interests at stake here. I mean, a lot of DACA participants, you know, not all are in highly skilled or middle skilled occupations, and their employers certainly wouldn't like to lose them. There are a fair number who are in college and university, and those institutions don't want to lose them. At the same time, the numbers aren't big. The overall population that's getting DACA is about 700,000. It could be larger under some of the dream bills, but that's a really small share of the total U.S. workforce. So really, the impact is more so on individual businesses and employers, on universities, on communities that have large numbers of DACA dreamers. But their numbers are so small that there's not a huge impact, we believe, either way on the national economy or other U.S. workers.
Anything to indicate to you that DACA recipients are taking jobs, as some critics will say, from Americans who were born here?
DACA recipients are less than 1% of the so-called millennial workforce, young American workers. They're really not big enough in number to compete on a very high level with U.S. workers nationally. And they tend to be located, heavily concentrated in certain states like California and Texas. So if anything, they're competing more so with themselves and with other Latino immigrants than they are with the general U.S. millennial population.
What makes it most likely that something will be approved in a somewhat bipartisan fashion? And what would be the factors that would prevent something from actually occurring to protect DACA recipients or create a new DREAM Act of sorts?
Well, there are a fair number of Republicans as well as a large majority of Democrats on the record in favor of one or another of the DREAM bills pending in Congress right now. Many of them do come from states like California and Florida with large immigrant populations. Some come from Texas even. And those Republicans from those states do have constituencies that are more likely to be in favor of some sort of legislation that resolves the status of DACA dreamers. But then there's also a large number of Republicans and some Democrats that represent parts of the country that don't have very many DACA dreamers or many immigrants in general. And we have both President Trump during his campaign and a fair number of people in Congress who have campaigned explicitly against any sort of legalization. And I think we'll have to see what happens during the primaries. But all of this around the DREAM legislation has to be resolved before the primaries if people are not going to start losing their benefits in March.
That was our co-host Steve Goldstein with Randy Capps at the Migration Policy Institute. And speaking of that upcoming March deadline for a legislative solution, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle want to resurface the issue in January. Senator Jeff Flake hopes to bring a bipartisan solution for DACA participants to the Senate floor in January. Here he is speaking last week about the effort.
Well, with DACA, right now you have about 800,000 kids that have protected status, but there's also a broader population, kids who are eligible but haven't registered. That could be, you know, over 2 million. And so what we're negotiating now is the scope, you know, how many of these kids will be allowed to come in.
The answer to that question, and many others, is crucial for Francisco Luna. The 27-year-old is a DACA recipient. He just renewed his status, which now expires in November of 2019. Luna has been a paralegal and an organizer, and he joins me along with Josh Nunez. He owns Nunez & Associates Law Firm in Phoenix, which does immigration law. He represents a lot of Dreamers and DACA recipients. He also has employees and members of his family in the program. And Francisco, let me start with you. What has this last year been like for you? I mean, it seems like it would have just been like this massive roller coaster.
It's been definitely a roller coaster of emotions, anxiety, stress, fear, trying to figure out how do you survive, how do you stay afloat, and just more than anything, how do you alleviate all this anxiety and how do you find solutions among all the mess?
So to continue the roller coaster analogy a little bit, is it safe to say that these last maybe 6 weeks to 2 months have been sort of like the end where you're just constantly going around the curves? You think there might be a permanent solution coming, there's not. Maybe you think there is again, there's not.
Yeah, so politically speaking, it's been something that we think it's going to happen, something that we see like it's not going to happen due to the administration we're under. And you try to figure out, you try to do these political analysis just to see like what's doable, what's feasible, or what may happen based on the conversation. But everything is, it's like a second passes and you're already like looking the other way just to see what's going on. So it's been definitely a mess.
Josh, how about for you? I mean, you work with a lot of DACA recipients. You have people in your office. You have family members who are DACA recipients. What has this been like for you and for them?
Well, I mean, throughout the year, there have been many changes. Obviously, the law has stayed the same. There haven't been changes to the law. However, in immigration law, there's a lot of discretion that the president has in terms of how to enforce the law. And so, you know, comparing the Obama administration to the Trump administration, the exercise of discretion has been, you know, very volatile. And so I thought at least, and some other immigration attorneys thought that DACA would be sort of a sacred thing to the president. And so when he did decide to terminate it, that was a big surprise. And so that caused a lot of angst in addition to the other executive actions that he had taken. And so for my office, it has been a roller coaster in terms of adjusting to, you know, the expectations that we set to our clients. It used to be that you could tell an immigrant who had no criminal history, who had been here 20 years, who had kids here, who was a productive individual in the society, you could tell them, you know, that there's a fighting chance. And now that has changed.
From a policy perspective, though, the president has basically said, Congress, if you send me a bill to deal with DACA, I'll sign it. Congress has failed to do this, it seems, at least a couple of times now. Is it in some ways maybe hard to figure out where exactly the blame should be placed? Yes, the president did decide to end the program, but it seems like he's willing to maybe make it permanent if only Congress could get him a bill to do it.
Well, that's always been the case. I mean, Congress is the maker of the laws, right? However, the president still has to deal with what he has. And if the laws don't change, if Congress does not pass a bill, which an act of Congress is pretty hard to get by these days, he's still the president and he still has to deal with kids who have been here. And so, you know, the president still has a responsibility to deal with these individuals. And so sooner or later, you're going to, you know, the Department of Homeland Security is going to be removing young people who have been here 20 years. And so the president has a moral obligation to not only a moral obligation, but also a constitutional obligation to deal with that scenario.
Francisco, what are you hearing from your fellow DACA recipients? I know you were in D.C. a little while ago, sort of working on this issue with people from around the country. What kinds of emotions are out there among DACA recipients? What are they saying? What are they thinking?
Definitely a lot of stress, just for a lot of them that have been able to achieve a lot of their degrees, a lot of their job placements, more so businesses as well. Just a lot of stress as to what's going to happen and fear of family separation.
Josh, are those the same kinds of things you're dealing with and seeing and hearing in your office?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The anxiety obviously is a given. You know, one thing that I have also seen is sort of the resilience from these DACA recipients. They want to mobilize. They want to, you know, get involved. And so from a political standpoint, I have seen a lot of organizing, maybe from a source of desperation. But more than anything else, I have seen DACA recipients and allies really turn up the pressure on our public officials.
What would an ideal bill dealing with DACA look like for you?
For me, definitely a pathway to citizenship. And as well with this administration or something that Santa has been in compromise. Something that is more digestible for me would be just protection of me, my family here in the U.S. And then just more so the opportunity for people to be humans, to have that human connection with their loved ones and to be able to save that.
Yeah. Josh, what about you?
You know, for me, I think the government, the United States government, has to be careful not to perpetuate this two-tier class system that we currently have. You have citizens, and then you have these individuals who are DACA recipients who have all the obligations of a U.S. citizen, but they don't get to enjoy the same benefits that their government provides because they're not legitimately here. Even DACA recipients, they do not have legal status. They have legal presence, but they don't have legal status. And so right now what we have is these young people that are fundamentally a second class, a second tier type of resident in America. And so for me, an ideal bill would be one that does away with that tier class system. And so for that, I think the bill has to include a pathway to citizenship, and it can't be an onerous one.
Going forward, as we are heading into 2018 and maybe a resolution to this issue, what are you telling your clients? I mean, what advice are you giving them? What questions do they have for you? What kinds of things are you finding yourself saying to them?
Right. So the legal advice is pretty straightforward with everyone. You know, don't commit crimes. You know, remain a productive citizen. And that's not difficult to sell because I think the majority of the immigrant community is not sort of committing crimes. I also find myself sort of doing a lot of counseling. I mean, you know, people call and they want a solution. They want hope. They want inspiration. And so what we have to tell them is to believe in democracy, believe that the American people will deal with this issue with compassion and to keep the hope alive.
I want to ask each of you, what is your level of optimism that this issue will be addressed in what is a satisfactory way for each of you in the, let's say, the early part of 2018? Francisco, I'll start with you. You're laughing. That can't be a good sign.
I don't know if it's a laughter of anxiety or a laughter of disbelief that this is even a question. More so the reason, like, 4 weeks, right? And I constantly got to hear from members of Congress that, oh, don't worry, by December 8th, we'll do something. Like, it's going to happen. You're taken care of. And they give you the pat on the shoulder. And then coming to see that nothing unveiled, right? Nothing came out to be. And then moving on to December 21st, same message, like, don't worry, like, keep at it. You're doing great and keep doing what you're doing and you'll see something on December 21st. And then on December 21st, I was at the gallery in the Senate side and just seeing how these people laughed among each other, seeing how they just have random conversations, not even about the issue, and just putting a thumbs up, thumbs down, and they would immediately walk out of the room. Like, it's hard to say what 2018 is going to look like. What I can say is that we need to keep at it. We're hopeful that January 19, we're going to push hard and that something's going to happen for us and we're going to make it happen. And my levels of optimistic chart, I don't know how you would call that, but in anxiety level, I guess I would fall in more like a 10. Like,
your anxiety is higher than your level of optimism at the moment. And we should say January 19th is the next date for Congress to either pass a continuing resolution or some kind of bill to continue funding the government, which is where a lot of advocates are hopeful that this issue might come up.
Right. We would hope that it's a spending bill, and that's where a lot of members of Congress that had stuck to the issue and have placed the commitment for Dreamers and DACA recipients, that they really utilize that leverage to make something happen.
All right, Josh, how optimistic are you?
You know, I don't have as much writing on this as Francisco does. I'm not a dreamer or a DACA recipient, but I do see the level of anxiety and the level of fear and frustration that DACA recipients have. I'm a little more optimistic. You know, I'm just reading the tea leaves. And so I'm a little bit more optimistic because I believe in the American people. I think, you know, the American people overall favor a fix. So politically, there shouldn't be too much blowback for any politician willing to stick their neck out for these young DACA recipients.
All right. Josh, Francisco, thanks a lot for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Attorney Josh Nunez owns Nunez & Associates Law Firm. He does immigration law and represents a number of Dreamers and DACA recipients. 27-year-old Francisco Luna is a DACA recipient. He's also a paralegal and an organizer. He recently renewed his DACA status, which is now set to expire in November of 2019.